Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Nemesis, Book 4, by David Beers, narrated by Travis Baldry. 1. Present Day. Will floated among the clouds. They looked truly magnificent, unlike anything he had experienced before. There were times when he needed to jump from planes, but that was simply a rush. A fall that one didn't so much experience as frantically try to grasp, failing with each passing second. This was different. This was looking out across heaven. This was understanding beauty. Everything that happened down below, from the crater in the earth to Mark's running around plotting, none of it mattered from up here. Up here, there was only white and blue, only a light breeze. He could get lost in the beauty, even with what surrounded him. But not for long, because his eyes would see the green smoke wrapping around him, reminding him it was the reason he still lived. The air up here was far too thin to keep him alive, yet he floated miles above the world, his lungs working just fine, because of the creature in front of him. His eyes found her again, and he remembered why he came, returning from the wonder of these heavens. She stared back at him, not speaking. The color stemming from her body enveloping Will in a loose-fitting cocoon. Will didn't know what to say. No sound came from his earpiece. No words were spoken. Stunned, all of his training disappeared. He stood, well, he floated, in the presence of something far greater than humanity could be or produce, and there was nothing for him to do but stare at her and wait for the death surely coming. "Will, are you there? Can you hear me?" The earpiece spoke to him finally, Mark's voice sounding as calm as ever. "Yes," Will whispered, though he understood that the creature 10 feet from him knew everything she needed to, that whispering wouldn't keep anything from her. "Tell her your name," Mark said. "Tell him to stop speaking," the creature said, the nearly ephemeral color tightening against Will, not choking him, but applying pressure that made his heart pound in his chest. Will said nothing, though, because Mark's voice died in his ear.
You tell me, not your..."
And she paused, seeming to search for the correct word.
"Not your puppeteer. Tell me why you returned."
Will noticed for the first time that his mouth was dry. It felt like all the moisture left him the same as the ground beneath his feet. Up here in this sky, he was completely alone, with nothing but space and a long fall beneath him. Somehow he had allowed his mind to become enraptured with what surrounded him instead of what faced him. Now, though, that notion ended. He saw what was before him, saw it clearly, and understood there was no one coming to help him. Mark sent him because he realized how alone one would be with this thing, because Mark was smarter than anyone Will had ever met. What had Will thought? Certainly not this, floating in the clouds and staring at something that shouldn't exist. Will never understood complete abandonment until this moment. He tried to swallow, but nothing went down his throat. "The man in my ear sent me. He wants... I don't know. He wanted me to come, and so here I am."
"You came to the house, to the girl's house. You saw me there, didn't you?"
Will nodded.
"Were you in the woods?"
"I missed my shot," he said. Silence hung between them, so thick it almost took form.
"What is it you want?" she asked.
Hanging slightly above the clouds, flying like a god, this alien asked him an existential question. Asked him what he wanted, and the question wasn't meant as a "what do you want right now," but bigger, deeper. Will didn't know how he knew that, but he did. This creature wanted to understand something about him. He could only tell the truth, because he thought that if he lied up here among the clouds, he might not live long enough to watch the fall as his body plummeted back to earth, landing with such force that he would end up as little more than a bloody gel. "I used to know, but I don't think I do anymore. I used to want to make sure that things like you didn't get a start on our planet. I used to want to keep things safe for others."
"And now," she said.
He couldn't tell her that he wanted to live, because that wasn't necessarily the truth, or the whole truth. Wrigley lived, but what kind of life? And in the end, that was his fault. So was it life he sought in total, or something else? Was it redemption? "I don't know," he said. "A lot of things, maybe. Or nothing." The alien looked at him with eyes that no doubt had seen things Will couldn't imagine, eyes that probably looked at his singular life the same as he would an ant's. Disposable. Inconsequential. Tiny to the point of less than insignificant. Yet she didn't move. Will wondered what she thought, wondered if she believed him, or if she thought him playing coy. Fear didn't run through him, not exactly, though he realized that coyness would kill him. He told her the truth, hoping that she would see it, hoping that it would be enough.
"What is the man in your ear's name?"
God bless, it was enough. "Marks," Will said. She nodded slightly.
"Marks,"
she whispered his name, and then, speaking louder, she said,
"What do you want?"
Again, the eerie calm came through the earpiece to Will. It was as if nothing Marks saw right now bothered him in the least, as if the man was simply describing to someone how to fix a broken faucet.
"I want to meet you."
A smile bloomed on the alien's face, brilliant like the sun, and the color around Will spread out, allowing him to feel her happiness. A sick happiness, though, like a tumor, smiling.
"Are you the one in charge? The one who sent those men to kill me with the machines?"
"I'm in charge," Marks said.
"Good,"
the alien said.
"I think we should meet, too."
Will watched as a piece of the green turned into a point, then moved to aim at his face. He wanted to scream, because in that instant he understood what was to happen. It came too quick for him to really notice, though. He couldn't even breathe. Wrigley's eyes were open. For the first time in over a decade, she opened them and could see the world around her. It wasn't just the images on the television screen. She had been able to see the physical world during her lengthy sleep, of course. But her interpretation of those images changed now. It wasn't that she saw Mark sitting on the couch across from her, but that she saw him as a separate entity now. Before, he had been a god figure, something to be feared and respected. But now she saw him as only a man, one that happened to be across the room from her. She didn't fear him anymore. She only wanted to get away because she had things to do. Will was on the television, or rather, what Will was staring at. He looked directly into the thing's face, a mask of green and yet eerily human qualities. Wrigley recognized, though, that it didn't matter if this thing was human or not. Beauty radiated off it, off her, and Wrigley found it hard to pull her eyes away because of that beauty. This thing was more than just an alien. That wasn't the only reason everyone in the room was held with rapture, because even through the television, Wrigley sensed the striking power, the allure, the sense of right. Wrigley thought, briefly, that it was like looking at some dominant king 500 years ago, caught up in his greatness. That summed it up, that word, greatness. Something men thought they saw in each other, but until now, none held a clue as to what the word actually meant. Wrigley looked over to Marks, wanting to know if he saw the same thing. He stared at the screen as if it held the secret to eternal life. To Wrigley, she couldn't tell if he was even breathing. His stillness so total, but his eyes so alive. They danced like a bug's legs after flying onto one of those blue zapper lamps. Was this his lamp? This thing on television? The alien's words filled up the room as she asked Marks what he wanted. Wrigley didn't look to the television, but watched Marks as he picked up the radio on his lap, putting it to his lips. She didn't listen to what he said, because she didn't care. She didn't care what he wanted at all anymore. She was only concerned with how he acted. She needed to understand him better, because in that understanding, she would find her escape. His movements were the same, everything the same, except for his attention. It wasn't on anyone else in the room, as it usually was. Everything about Kenneth Marks focused on the television screen.
"That's how you'll get away," Wrigley thought, "because something is going on with him in this thing. Something that isn't exactly right, and while he's so focused on her, you'll have a chance. Just wait for it. Wait, and be ready when it happens." "And go where?" "It doesn't matter. Whatever it is you have to do, it isn't here. Here is done. Here is dead, and you're done living with the dead. It's time that you start living, and if there isn't anyone else alive on this planet, then you live alone. But you will live."
Wrigley wasn't 100% sure what to do yet, but she knew that it no longer consisted of obeying Kenneth Marks.
Kenneth Marks couldn't be happier. He had been told to shut up, been completely ignored, and every single second of it was absolutely fantastic. This beautiful being was doing everything he hoped she would. Regal, magnificent, and strong. She wasn't disappointing. Yes, this is what he had been hunting for. This was the missing piece in his life. Now he just needed to figure out how to put himself near her, needed to figure out how to make her see what he was, what she could help him be. She needed to see him as he saw her, that he was the link between her species and his, once she taught him. Kenneth Marks knew Wrigley was looking at him, and also could tell by her body language that she wasn't aware of his knowledge. She had changed, and he was beginning to think something inside her mind had broken. If he could have a few minutes with her, to talk to her for just a bit, he could figure out what it was and if he could fix it. A part of him, now an insignificant part, still wanted to have fun with Wrigley. That part was overshadowed by what filled the television screen, but it couldn't be fully eclipsed. Wrigley would still be a part of this, whether that came through a bomb or some other mechanism. Kenneth Marks would do his absolute best to make sure she realized her fear. She would relive Bolivia. She would relive her child's death. But God save him, the creature was speaking to him now. Joy rushed through Kenneth Marks just as it would an addict taking the first line of cocaine to his nose. "What do you want?" she asked. And there had never been a simpler answer in the history of Earth. "I want to meet you," he said, staring at her the same as Will, both of them unable to look away. He watched her smile, and while Kenneth Marks had never experienced love, was this infatuation? Was he some kind of teenage boy fumbling at a high school slut's bra strap? Maybe. And that was okay. Because fumbling? Because infatuation? Those things were fun.
"Are you the one in charge? The one who sent those men to kill me with the machines?"
And suddenly the smile, the one from just a second before, turned. It didn't disappear. Kenneth Marks didn't think the corners of her mouth changed, but for the first time he saw danger in the creature for him. Before, he saw danger for other people, but not for himself. He had only seen a perfect union with this creature, or at the least, an imperfect one. Any other path seemed impossible. Until she asked that question. In it, Kenneth Marks saw his own death, saw it clearly, the way that he'd seen so many others' deaths before.
"I'm in charge," Marks said.
"Good," the alien said.
"I think we should meet, too."
Kenneth Marks saw no shift in the creature's attention. She seemed to take in everything at once, but he could see a shift in Will's. Kenneth Marks' own eyes found what Will saw quickly, a piece of the green waves surrounding Will breaking off, almost a solid pipe, with a point on the end. Only the transparent pipe was flexible, moving like water. It looked at Will for a second, as if it possessed eyes, resembling a snake, hesitating before striking. Kenneth Marks' eyes narrowed, his mind calculating everything it possibly could, trying to race to the conclusion of that colorful pipe. It moved too quickly, though, stabbing out at Will, filling the camera's vision. He heard Will breathe in, a straining, hoarse sound, as if he inhaled sand instead of air. The camera now focused up into the blue sky, Will's head turning and losing sight of the creature. Everyone in the room saw a cloudless light blue, listening to sandpaper rub against sandpaper over the television's stereo system. Kenneth Marks didn't stir as Will remained in that position for 30 seconds. When the camera finally moved again, the view turned, slowly, moving from Will's outward view to Will's own body, and finally to his face. Will's head was cocked slightly as he looked down into the camera. His facial features, the muscles that illustrated emotion, had disappeared, turned lax. His face looked like a well-done doll, the eyes being the only thing that showed the humanity, or at least life, inside him. No chill, no fear ran through Kenneth Marks. The same calmness that always made up his being remained.
"I'll come see you," Will's mouth said.
Though not Will. Kenneth Marks wasn't looking at Will any longer, wasn't conversing with Will. Then the mouth smiled, but not a smile Will had ever used before. The muscles were forced, grotesque, spreading out over Will's teeth in a way that made him look more insect than human.
2. Wrigley's mind. Wrigley's foot reached the top of the staircase first, and then carried the rest of her body up with it. The whole staircase had been dark, like she was walking into a black hole. Yet when she reached the top, light burst from everywhere, illuminating a room, the only true light she had seen since starting her climb from the first floor. The light had no single source, or at least that's how it appeared. It seemed to come from the walls, ceiling, and floor, but more, it seemed to come from the very air itself, as if it continually created a soothing, warm, white light. Wrigley didn't move. She just took it in, the light not blinding her as the warmth it provided spread across her skin. There was something on the other side of the room. It looked tiny from where she stood, like some kind of miniature statue. It might have been a mile away, give or take, but it was the only thing in this room. The only thing that she could see, anyway. Everything else was just pure light. Wrigley didn't want to move, afraid that if she did, the whole situation might change, that the light bathing her would disappear, that the warmth she finally felt in this cold place would die, leaving her with goosebumps and questions. There weren't any questions right now because she felt peace. She felt at home. Some part of Wrigley, not her conscious mind, but somewhere in a deep recess of her brain, perhaps only a few cells communicating with each other, felt something burning downstairs. Down what now seemed like an infinite number of flights, in a place that she resided a long, long time ago. Fire burned down there, and it would bring warmth, too, but not the kind she felt now. The problem, what those little cells spoke about, was that nothing could put the fire out. Maybe there had been a time, right when the kindling first began, that Wrigley could have returned downstairs and doused it. Now, though? No way. The fire was growing, consuming more and more with each passing minute. The brain cells didn't know necessarily what started it, but that didn't concern them. They knew that it would reach her, sooner or later. That the bottom of a house cannot continue to burn and the top of the house stand. It was a ways off, though. There was that, at least. And the rest of Wrigley's brain? It wanted to enjoy this room. It was curious for the first time in this place, instead of the dread that filled it for so long. Dread at the pictures, at the statues, at the voices. Now her brain was curious about what stood on the other side of the room. And that felt good. Being here, in this room. So why not enjoy it, since the fire would reach her eventually? Wrigley paid the little itch of those few cells no mind. She was here now, and she was going to enjoy it. She would live it up in here, and whatever was on the other side of the room could join in if it wanted. And if it didn't? Well, no need for it to stay. This was Wrigley's home. Finally, and for once, she owned this room, no one else. Wrigley started walking across the floor, noticing with a huge sense of relief that nothing changed as she did. She headed for the object on the other side, feeling happy, feeling alive. 3. Present day. General Knox looked down at the tablet in front of him. The drone's images revealed what his scouts had already told him. The satellites couldn't peer into any area that the strands spread to. Something inside that territory blocked all external imagery. Drones, though, tiny, advanced ones, could fly through and send back videos and still pictures. That, plus the boots on the ground that Knox dared to let get close enough to gather information. Knox saw the white strands when he dropped Will off, but when he returned to the base, he saw nothing like them. The satellites showed him a city with a crashed airplane, smoke coming up from different places, but otherwise a normal city. That's when Knox knew he had to do something else to get eyes inside Grayson. The drones showed him something similar to what he saw with his own eyes, which was truly terrifying. Knox wasn't shaking, wasn't really even feeling nervous, but even so, what he looked at scared him. The strands grew out in every direction, taking over the city, moving further and further into the surrounding area. "How fast is it growing?" he asked, not even questioning whether or not it lived, knowing that nothing built this. But it grew. Whatever was in Grayson, whatever wrecked his division, had been very much alive, and it wasn't a goddamn architect. Those things down there were growing, and now they were stretching out beyond their incubator. But how fast? He would need to move everyone, push them further back. They weren't ready to attack this, didn't even know how. Men died when they went up against this thing, died without a hope of survival, and Knox wanted to avoid more of that until they knew how to fight it, Knox grabbed the phone from his pocket and entered Mark's number. It rang once, and his secretary picked up.
"Is he there?"
Knox asked.
"One second."
There was a click as she put Knox on hold. He sent a scouting crew out to look at the things growing across the roads. No one touched it, though they managed to cut a piece off, where it quickly grew over the device used to collect it. The detached piece sat on the table in an airtight sealed container. So far, the white strands hadn't been able to open the container, hadn't been able to spread outside of it, but the strands rapidly grew across the entire inside of the see-through container. Knox looked at it now, seeing it was still, yet knowing with certainty if he cut open the box, the stuff would begin taking over the room. It was trapped right now, but the moment Knox released it, the consumption of Earth would continue.
The consumption of Earth.
He didn't like the thought at all.
"Hello, General Knox. How are you?"
Knox leaned on the table, his right index finger beginning to tap.
"Have her pull up the incoming data."
Silence fell over the line. Knox knew the woman was listening in on the phone call and doing exactly as he said.
"Interesting," Mark said. "How far are you away from it?"
10 miles.
"You've sent people to look at it?"
"Yes,"
Knox said.
"We have a sample. It didn't die when we cut it off. We're going to need to back up, move everyone further away from the city, because at its current rate..."
"It'll reach you in about 5 hours,"
Marks interrupted, his voice sounding like he spoke to himself rather than Knox. Knox hadn't been ready to give a time of when he thought it would reach them, only that it would happen soon, but he didn't think Marks was off in his estimate.
"Go ahead and start moving now. I want you to stay 10 hours ahead of its growth, no more, no less."
"Do you want us to attempt to retard the growth?"
Knox said.
"No, don't touch it. Analyze the sample and send me what comes back."
"What happened with Will?"
Knox didn't want to ask the question, but it had been hours since he dropped the man off in Grayson, and if he was dead, Knox wanted to know.
"Will?" Mark said. "I imagine he's on his way back right about now."
The Strands knew they were safe. The species that had been here with them either left or were assimilated. They generated a good bit of heat, and when the Strands plunged into their flesh, the heat actually stimulated their growth. It was time to start moving further out, though, because they needed room, a lot of room. The Strands stretched on for miles, all the way from the new center of Grayson, the hole that dropped into the depths of the Earth. A near infinite number of them branched out in their search for new space, with new pathways being created every few minutes. If one took an aerial view of the picture, the world around Grayson, Georgia, would look like a land covered in pure white snow, a snow so thick that not even houses or trees could be seen. The Strands covered the area like a white blanket, and from that same aerial view, one could see circles of colored bulbs on the snow. The bulbs didn't touch. They spread out by up to 100 feet sometimes, but still made concentric circles centered around the hole that the Strands erupted from. The bulbs grew smaller as they moved out from the hole, with the ones closest now approaching the size of grown men. Each bulb contained a color, though the ones born first from the white Strands also contained something else visible to the eye. A creature, floating upright with eyes open, though whether they could see anything was unknown. Not even the Strands knew, because that wasn't their job, and certainly none of the creatures inside the bulbs would ever remember if they could see while in the womb. Eerily, though, if one looked at the creatures in the bulbs, their open eyes stared straight ahead at a world they didn't understand, one that their DNA hadn't evolved from. Eyes, perhaps sightless, that looked through a haze of color, without any emotion floating across their faces. The Bynums inside appeared human-shaped, though deep color swimming around them made the details of each one hazy. They were growing larger, and the Strands did know that, sensed it, because the creature's birth was coming. Quickly. And the more space that the Strands gave them, the safer they would be. The Strands needed room, because many, many more bulbs needed to birth. The Strands didn't know how large an area they traveled across, only that they would continue growing until they couldn't any longer. The more area they possessed, the more bulbs could sprout, and the greater their species' chance of survival. The Strands wanted to start with a large number, and to do that, they needed space. Morena lowered Will slowly to the ground, which was to say she lowered herself. During the descent, she rapidly assimilated all the information she could from the man's mind. It felt very different from the other humans she possessed since landing here. The others had been in a sort of disarray, possessing some rudimentary elegance, yet
Disorganization permeated all the thoughts and information mapping. This man, this Will, was different. His mind kept things regimented, with classifications and entire areas sectioned off. She didn't care about much of what went on in his mind. Indeed, a lot of it was the same as her other hosts had been. What she wanted to know was who sent Will. She wanted to know where he was and how she could get to him. It wasn't that simple, though, she quickly realized. She wouldn't be able to travel to this man, Kenneth Marks, because she wouldn't be able to get out of Grayson without being stopped. The government, though Will thought of them as the military, would be waiting for him, and consequently for Morena. She would need to deal with them before she found Kenneth Marks. Will's feet touched the ground, or rather, the white strands covering the ground. The strands didn't react to the stranger's landing. They knew their mother controlled this body. Even as her own body levitated high above Will's, still in the clouds, she began moving him down the street. She carefully avoided the pods. To touch one now would be catastrophic for the Bynum inside, but it wasn't difficult to step clear of them. Each one shone inside Morena's mind like a tiny star, illuminating her with their beauty. Even if she needed to walk next to Will, the two of them matching step for step, she would do it to make sure no harm came to her children. She didn't know what she would do when she met this man, Kenneth Marks, only that she wouldn't give him what he wanted. The information she found inside Will's head didn't illuminate what he wanted because Will didn't understand Kenneth Marks. Morena came to see that his operation, as Will termed it, wasn't legal, which meant sanctioned, she thought. So Kenneth Marks was operating outside the rules of this society when he sent Will in to find a Morena. It didn't matter, really. She would find this man, the one apparently in charge of the government coming after her, and she would deliver her terms through this intermediary. Then Kenneth Marks could either comply or force Morena to make way for her children. She didn't think the human understood that. She thought, from what she gathered in Will's mind, that the man wanted to use her for something. To use her for his own purposes. She couldn't describe it any better. Morena thought there might be some fun in explaining to Kenneth Marks that his purposes meant nothing in this new world. She thought someone like him might find that hard to understand. She left Will's mind, leaving him on autopilot as he walked across the white strands that held her children. She looked out of her own eyes, seeing the clouds again, yet she had no time to focus on them. She had turned off that awful voice, found the human they sent in, and now she needed to look for the other, the being she felt that shouldn't exist on this planet. She had a bit of time until she would be needed here in the present, and so she had to find this other creature, needed to understand whether it was friend or foe, whether she could trust it to help, or whether it needed to die. It felt less, like it had faded some, but still there. Not dead, not completely gone, just not as strong. Did that mean it was leaving? And if so, leaving this area or leaving the planet? Morena didn't know the answers to any of these questions, but they were imperative. She had to find it. That was the bottom line. The next great threat to her colonization might reside in this other being. Morena looked down and started her descent, watching the clouds rise around her, covering her vision, though her aura still brought in all the information she needed. As she passed below the cloud line, she saw the world beneath, a white sea of tendrils reaching out across the land, stretching over everything, allowing no other colors to show through, none besides the pods they carried. The white shot up and then fell back to the ground as it covered houses, trees, and every other object it touched.
Beautiful, she thought.
Her feet touched the ground, and she could see Will in the distance, walking a bit stilted. She would never get the hang of these human bodies, not fully, but that was okay. Either they would listen to Morena, or they would vanish. The time when she needed to spread through them was nearly at an end. Morena turned to the left, letting Will's body walk its own path. To the left. That's where she felt the thing the strongest, the other. And suddenly her aura rang out with something that she had missed. Brian's house. He lived to the left. She hadn't thought much of him since she separated from him. Truly, she didn't even know if he survived. But where he lived was in the same direction as the pull she felt from the other. It could be just a coincidence. Or maybe not. Morena walked, heading to her left, finally thinking about Brian again. 4. After the destruction of Bynum.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?